Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. On October 28th, the Community Oncology Alliance, or COA, hosted their virtual payer exchange summit on oncology payment reform, which featured a panel entitled Biosimilar Opportunities, Challenges, and Realities. The panel, which featured Kathy Oubre, MS, Chief Operating Officer at the Pontchartrain Cancer Center in Louisiana and member of the Board of Directors for COA, discussed some of the current challenges and barriers to uptake for biosimilars. Kathy's practice has been longtime users of biosimilars, and Kathy regularly advocates for their use. In a discussion with the Center for Biosimilars, Kathy expanded on some of the topics she mentioned in the panel and offered other practices that may be wary of biosimilars insight into the potential benefits they could see by using them more. So to start us off, you've said that your practice tries to use biosimilars as much as possible. What can you tell practices and patients who are still unsure about biosimilars about the benefits that you've seen from utilizing them in cancer care?
So we've seen an array of benefit in using biosimilars to the practice. You know, in addition to savings for the practice, the largest thing we've seen is additional savings to the patient. And while that might not resonate with everyone, healthcare has become more and more expensive. And that term financial toxicity, you hear that more and more every year. And biosimilars present that really nice opportunity to provide additional savings to a patient. You know, financial toxicity continues to grow, but we've seen that more now during this COVID crisis than ever before, with people perhaps either losing their jobs, losing their insurance, or even just having their hours cut, so they're just making less income. Their expenses are probably still the same, but now their income is less. So as you're trying to figure out how to pay your light bill, your groceries, and continue your healthcare, biosimilars have presented that opportunity to help patients try to afford their healthcare while juggling everything else.
And considering those potential cost savings, what do you see as the biggest barriers to biosimilar acceptance on the employer and payer end?
So in my opinion, the biggest barrier right now to wider biosimilar acceptance tends to be formulary decisions, and mainly by the payers. So it's difficult to operationalize biosimilars when different payers are picking different biosimilars and requiring us to use them. You know, we've reached an interesting point in healthcare where the payers are taking a much more aggressive approach to dictating the way physicians should practice medicine and what we should use in order to practice that. And that's the biggest issue, because it's operationally very difficult to stock multiple biosimilars for one product choice.
You've also mentioned the necessity of stocking multiple biosimilars due to differences in coverage in this recent COA panel. Could you discuss the ways that your practice has handled this and the importance of managing multiple biosimilars efficiently?
So we have to deal with multiple biosimilars in our practice, and we have kind of built those from the beginning all the way through the end. So what I mean by that is we've included the biosimilars within our treatment pathways. So we have treatment pathways for the originators as well as for each one of the biosimilars. And we kind of have cheat sheets within the provider's offices when they're choosing treatment regimens that list the correct biosimilar per payer. And then when they're picking that treatment plan, there's a little pop-up box that talks about whether that actually is the correct biosimilar for a particular patient. So that's kind of your first stop. Then when we go to the financial assistance department, there's another layer there, because they have to be the ones that obtain the prior authorization. So usually the insurance company is not going to give you an authorization for something they don't cover. So that's kind of your second layer of protection. And then from a nursing standpoint, we have another pop-up built into their workflow. So when they go to choose that particular biosimilar out of the drug cabinet, it actually gives them another stopgap. And it says, you know, are you sure you want to give X? And they have to then kind of stop for a second, and it causes them to stop and really think. And then they put their initials in, and only after all of that's done does the drug cabinet unlock and allow them to pull out that biosimilar. Because, you know, we have to be really careful when we're operationalizing these things. If you give the incorrect biosimilar, the unapproved one, to the wrong patient, your practice won't get paid for that. And then it takes multiple successful administrations past that to make up for that financial loss. And quite frankly, you can't deal with that many financial losses if you don't have your operations down, because then, you know, you end up on a very slippery slope to financial problems.
Another thing that came up in the panel is that ideally, providers would have autonomy when it comes to deciding the right drug for the right patient. What are the incentives that you think would help ensure oncologists are delivering quality care in that respect?
I think ultimately physicians already deliver quality care. I don't know if we necessarily need to be incentivized for delivering quality, but I certainly would not discourage that. I think we need parity. That's what we need. We need to put the decision-making back into the hands of the physician. Really more of a shared decision-making between the patient and the physician on what's best for the patient. And again, I hate to go back to it, but it really bothers me when a payer is getting in the middle of that relationship between a physician and his patient and that medical decision-making. So what we need is parity. We need to be able to give the correct biosimilar to the correct patient for the correct disease process.
And lastly, you were really firm in stating that biosimilars are an area that should be explored and that shouldn't be given up on. What do you see happening with them going forward?
So I do think biosimilars were a little slow in the U.S. market in the beginning, but I do think in the last few years, especially with the Rituxan, Herceptin, and Avastin biosims, you have seen a much larger uptick recently. You know, IQVIA did a webinar and sent in some really interesting data that in the three most recent biosims for Avastin, Herceptin, and Rituxan have had the largest uptake of all of the biosimilars over the last 5 years. And it's actually been a twofold increase just with those products coming out. I think you'll continue to see that. I think we are in the infancy of the biosimilar market. That's why I feel it's too premature to say that the biosimilars are a failed project. I don't agree with that. I think, you know, physicians are becoming more comfortable with them. So are, you know, APPs. And I think patients are starting to see that as well. And we need to believe in them, we need to champion them, but we also need to work with our payers for parity, for the right to be able to help patients make the right decisions in their healthcare.
Well, Kathy, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.